Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
The Killer Bee!
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what up, face down? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I'm Branham, it's Brian behind the glass. It's a Friday edition. The Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5, a getaway edition of the Killer Bees. A divisional round edition of the Killer Bees. Texans play Kansas City. They were leaving. Did you see the pep rally today, Blankers?
Yeah.
They were leaving NRG.
Yeah, Lisa Station was covering it live, and every time they went to them, no one was coming out of the doors, and people were starting to get a little antsy.
Really? No one was. They're not going.
There wasn't a lot of people out there. There was a decent amount of people out there, but it was all right.
I mean, it's the middle of a work day.
That's true.
You know what I mean? It's the middle of the workday. What do you
expect? Yeah, but you guys, when you guys are in the tournament, you always have a real good turnout when you do the same thing.
Our beloved Cougs! Well, I mean, it's just a bigger deal, I guess, is what it is.
Maybe so.
What it comes down to. Or more loyal fans, you know. Like, I mean, I think the college fans are more loyal than...
It just means more.
I don't know.
Well, I think the other thing is,
it depends.
On campus, you can get a lot of students to just pop in, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, what are you going to get, like, all the nurses from the med center to pop on over at NRG? They have lives to save. They can't be doing that. Oh, I noticed that Brian got a haircut.
I saw that, too.
It was about 6 weeks too late, but it looks good, Brian. Looking good, looking sharp.
You're generous in only saying it was 6 weeks too late. It's probably 2 months too late.
Well, I have kindness in my heart, as you can tell. But a busy show. It is the Friday before the divisional round of the NFL playoffs. We'll talk about the playoffs. We'll talk about the Texans. DJ Bieniemy will be joining us at 4 o'clock. My least favorite thing to do in the world is Who Said It. We'll be doing Who Said It a little bit later for whatever reason. But we'll have a very busy show. Fun show. It's a Friday. You can call in, too, if you want. And give us your best fired up motivational speeches, if you will. I think Paul did something similar reading the Twitch chat. Did they do that on their show, Gallant and George?
I'm not sure. I didn't hear any of their show today, so I'm not quite sure.
I saw the YouTube chat said that love these calls, love the energy from these fan calls. So yeah, if you want to have energy,
the bench does that. Pump It Up, and they had some people that were really like overly fired up to call in and give their best.
Like this text that I'm reading, though, is during Paul's show. It was on YouTube. Desert Stroh said, loving the energy from these fan calls. So I don't know what it was, but if you have energy and you're fired up for the divisional round tomorrow, let us have it throughout the show. I want to hear it. Look, this doesn't happen that often. Like, there hasn't been that many divisional rounds in Houston Texans history. You should be excited for tomorrow's game. You have a chance to do something tomorrow, the Texans do, that has never been done in franchise history. It's never been done in franchise history. Like, we could be on the brink of something that is historic. So you should be excited, even if it might not happen. You should be excited. Don't worry if you don't get any further than that. 713-780-ESPN. But we start with the Kings and the Rockets. Remember yesterday I told you guys to pound Sacramento -4.5.
Don't start that.
Never a doubt. When Branham gives you a play, you play it. Sacramento -4.5 was never a doubt. Sacramento with an easy cover last night.
Man, Rutgers. I was watching the end of that game going, I wonder how much you're sweating this, because I didn't know what you put on it. But I'm like, this is ridiculous. It is going to come down to the final possession as much as they were back and forth.
Yeah, it came down to those last two free throws.
Yeah.
Like, it took that Jalen Green miss. It took a Sacramento rebound with time left. It took the Sacramento rebound with time left, because if they rebound it without any time left, there's no foul, and it's a three-point game. So it was like the perfect storm of that cashing. But, yeah, look, second leg of a back-to-back, I'm always positive. I've heard the feedback from listeners and everybody that I am the epitome of positivity. They're like, Branham, you know, sometimes you need to be a little bit more critical. Sometimes you need to be a little bit more realist. You need to be less of a homer. You need to be less positive. And I hear that, but I can't do it when I look at the Houston Rockets last night. I know they lost, but I saw a lot of positives from this team. And look, Amin Thompson turning it over as many times as he did late wasn't great. The Rockets shooting. You see Sacramento play 2-3 zone for some critical possessions in the fourth quarter. That ain't great. But there was a lot of positive things that happened in yesterday's game.
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing is those back-to-backs, no matter how close in proximity you were to the night before, you know, they're tough. And going from Denver to Sac ain't great and because of where the airports are and everything. But at the same time...
Where are they?
Oh, they're way out in the middle of nowhere. Denver's airport's in the middle of nowhere. Sacramento, at least they moved the arena into the city more so because it used to be that the airport and the arena were out in the middle of nowhere.
Is this an excuse to lose games in Denver and Sacramento, though?
No, I'm not making excuses. I'm just telling you that back-to-backs are never easy in the NBA. That one isn't as simple as going Chicago-Milwaukee or, you know, New York and New Jersey or Boston or Philly when they're also in close proximity.
How much longer is the bus ride from the airport in Denver and the airport in Sacramento to the hotel than the average trip?
Oh, it can be half hour more.
Wow.
Yeah, the Denver airport is really in the middle of nowhere.
Somewhere in Colorado, though, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's still within state lines, but it ain't Denver proper. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, that's crazy. Ryan St. Branham has sunshine and rainbow shooting out of every orifice. Yeah, that's me. I'm super positive. And whenever I look back to – I don't care if a team loses the second leg of a back-to-back, especially a road back-to-back. Like, that's excusable. Like, I'm not a huge fan of the, you know, moral victories and making excuses for professionals, like the fact that they're on a bus for 30 extra minutes, like all that stuff. But whenever it's a back-to-back, I give you almost all the leeway in the world. So all of the excuses, you can throw them in there for a back-to-back. When I look at this game, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, and I wasn't just going to say it was about, I was just mentioning on a back-to-back when those cities are kind of the abnormal in terms of, you know, the travel time. But watching the game, look, I understand all the things that you're saying. The biggest thing to me was kind of what you were saying. What I keep harping on is that execution in the final 5 minutes of the game. It started right under the five-minute mark, and Jalen takes I just got done praising him about he doesn't take the contested, you know, by one or two player deep threes off balance, and he took one of those. And then they proceeded to do a lot of that early in the shot clock, crossing half court, one to maybe no passes, and just cranking up bad shots that – kind of was starting to bother me a little bit, and you're right. And then the two Amin turnovers, which are very unlike him, but were really ugly turnovers, I was like, yeah, the execution down the stretch can still get better.
All right, so that's all the negative stuff. Now, all the positivity that happened yesterday. First off, Amin Thompson had some critical turnovers, but 20-10. 20-10 and 5 for Amin Thompson. Pretty good stat line. Yes, get rid of the turnovers. That's obvious. Alpi Şengün, double-double, 21 points, 10 rebounds. Jalen Green continued his heater. He hit half of his shots from the floor and from three. He had another 28-point performance. He continues to play well. Cam Whitmore had three assists yesterday. Can you believe that? Cam Whitmore had three assists? He had as many assist blankers as he had three-point attempts. When was the last time you could say that about Cam Whitmore? Tari Eason is back. He's back, and not only is he back and playing 24 minutes, he scored 16, and did you notice he was on the floor in crunch time?
Yeah.
It shows you how critical and like how valuable he is to this team, maybe more valuable than critical, but those are the positives I take from yesterday's game. You were down and out. You scored 42 points in the fourth quarter. Positives.
Well, I like Alpi, too. I like the fact that Alpi is just, you know, it used to be that if you had – a traditional center in the league or a bigger body that he would be a little more apprehensive about kind of going in and trying to get his. And now, I mean, he was manhandling Sabonis. I mean, he was pounding, you know, two and three jab step dribbles to get even deeper into the lane. He was using both hands around the rim. His footwork is still fantastic. And he was getting a lot of his short shots around the basket with both hands to fall. So I thought Alpi was really, really good inside.
Yeah, how much stock? So those are my positive notes. I'm choosing because it's a Friday getaway edition. I'm in a good mood. I have a smile on my face. I had my favorite skirt steak with chimichurri earlier today for lunch. It was fantastic. I have some positivity. Now I do want to ask you how much stock do you put in the plus minus stat?
I'm not a big plus minus guy. I'd rather just kind of, you know, the eye test and watching how the game proceeds. I know that. That's kind of like a go-to stat for a lot of people. But, you know, it's not – I think it's the fact that you were on the floor with four other guys that had a positive impact on the scoreboard when you were on there. But it wasn't. I don't think it should just be significant to single out a single player in that during that time.
I think it's highly flawed. I'm not a huge plus-minus guy. I will gander at it. I think that it, you know, people are like, oh, this guy's plus-minus is the worst, that it's, you know, he's the worst player ever. I do think that you should put the bar, like, at the point differential. Like, yesterday the Rockets lost by 5, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, the bar, whenever you look at plus-minus for all of these players, should start at minus 5 because you lost by 5. So, like, Jalen Green had a minus 3 yesterday. But the team lost by 5. That means Jalen Green was an overall positive player if you believe in the whole plus-minus. And look, I don't really put a whole lot of stock in the plus-minus either, but it caught my attention yesterday looking at Alpi Şengün, because Alpi went 21-10 yesterday. It's like, oh, this great game. He was minus 21 in the plus minus. Like, that's a big number that catches my eye.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, again, that's why I say watch the game. I just like the fact that
what does that mean, though? Like, I mean, like, the plus, like, he, whenever he was on the floor, the team lost by 21.
But again, if he's on the floor, but he isn't doing anything wrong, but he's on the floor at times when the guys are taking the really bad shots and turning the ball over, those are going to be in. They're going to also be reflective on him, whether he had anything to do with it or not.
Worst in the game. Like, his was the absolute worst. Like, 4 other guys are also on the floor if somebody's taking a bad shot. And if you have the worst in the game, that ain't great.
Just stay positive. I think that the fact to me is, you know, just watching it, I just took the positive that he really was aggressive inside offensively and took it right to Sabonis, who's an all-star caliber player. And I liked the results he was getting, and I liked the fact that he was that aggressive. Because sometimes, you know, if he doesn't succeed early on or, you know, there's a lot of contact, a lot of times he's not going to go in and try and bang and do that as much. And I thought he was aggressive that way.
Yeah, I was just like, I rarely look at plus minus, but every now and then I'll take a peek if it's a big number. And I was shocked to see a minus 21 on Alpi's name on a night where he had 21 points and 10 rebounds. Who do you think's the better center, Alpi or Sabonis?
Oh boy, I think right now it's Sabonis. I just think that Sabonis has he's polished almost all aspects of his game. Like, he's a good shooter. He can shoot inside. He can face the basket. He still gets a ton of rebounds. He can play defense. So it's not a slap at Alpi at all. But I think that Sabonis right now, where he's at, where his game is at right now in his career, I think Sabonis is a slightly better player.
I don't even hesitate. I think Sabonis is on a different tier. Like, it's not a huge, huge gap. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if there's anything that Alpi does that Sabonis doesn't. And then on top of that, I think Sabonis is a better defender. I think he's more athletic on top of that. I would go Sabonis pretty easily.
Yeah, I think, you know, and you look at, they both have the footwork from the, you know, their experience overseas. And I might give Alpi a little bit of an advantage with his post footwork than Sabonis. But Sabonis' ability to use the head fake, the head and shoulder fake when he's facing the basket, you know, kind of, he has all the tools in the bag for that when inside, but he can also almost knock down a 3 ball if you need him to knock down a 3, which Alpi's still trying to refine. And I think he's a really good passer too. So, yeah, I like his game.
Yeah, I mean, Sabonis is shooting 48% from 3.
Oh, wow, I didn't know it was that high.
Yeah, it's the best of any big man in the league. I mean, he averages 20.5, 14. He hits 48% from 3. He's athletic.
Is he leading the league in rebounds or close to it?
I don't know. Like, I would imagine that 14 is pretty close, right?
Yeah, I think he's close to leading the league in rebounds.
I would guess that 14 is the league leader in boards. Let me pull it up real quick. Yeah, you say something funny.
Yeah, funny.
Yeah, he leads the league. Yep, you want to guess who number 2 is? He got traded in the offseason.
Got traded in the offseason?
Yep.
Karl-Anthony Towns.
That's right. Cat number 2. I wouldn't have guessed that.
I wouldn't either, because he's a guy that doesn't seem to be really determined or aggressive on defense.
And he kind of, like, he shoots a lot of threes. So, like, he kind of eliminates him getting a lot of offensive rebounds, you know? Like,
yeah.
There's a lot of times he's on the perimeter, and it takes you away from the paint.
He and Anthony Davis are the two guys that got so enamored with shooting threes that I think it hurts the fact that they have significant matchup advantages when they go down low.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Alpi's 11. Like, no, that's nothing to sneeze at, so that's pretty good. All right, 713-780-ESPN. This texter says, "Hey, Pete Rose, !" Stop beating against the Rockets. I think he meant betting, but why? Like, why would I do that if I think there's an edge there? I think there's an advantage. As soon as I saw Fred VanVleet was gone, 4.5, easy. Easy bet. And I never had a doubt. Never sweat. You asked me how much I was sweating. Never sweated it, Blinkers. Never had a doubt. All right, 713-780-ESPN. Busy show. Busy show. Who has the most to lose in the divisional round this weekend around the NFL? We'll get to your Texans questions. We'll play that dumb game, knows who said it. We'll also give you money. Like, I just, you know, bragged about the bet that I had yesterday. I boasted about it. Well, we're going to play BZ Money a little bit later. That way you can follow all the great bets that we have. Coach speak as well. But coming up next, should this season be considered a success for the Texans, even if they lose tomorrow in Kansas City? 713-780-ESPN, the HRP listener line. We're on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. We're on YouTube at ESPN Houston. We're on Twitter at ESPN975. Blankers at Pac-Man Joel. Brian at Sacked by BMAC. I'm at Jeremy Branham. We are the Bees, ESPN975 and ESPN925.
ESPN975. You found the killer bees live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
He's Blank, I am Branham. We are the Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. So every now and then, Brian will have a gem of a question. And I think this is one of those times, Blankers. Should the Texans season be considered a success even if they lose at Kansas City? 713-780-ESPN. Brian, do you mind if I ask my Twitter following this question?
No, go ahead.
Okay. Where do you stand on this, Blankers?
My personal opinion is that because of the fact that they at least got to where they were last year, they've overcome a lot of the things I didn't think they were able to overcome. Unless they get their doors blown off, it's not a failure. Maybe slightly disappointed, but I'm okay with it.
Yeah, I think that I'm gonna hedge here. To me, it's the context of tomorrow's game. Like, if they're in the game and they fight and it's a tight one late, maybe they get hosed on a bad call. With this Clay Walker guy, by the way, who's officiating tomorrow's game. It's really Clay Martin, but I'd rather say Clay Walker. He's sick. The Chiefs are 6-0 lifetime. Whatever, this guy's the white cap for a Kansas City game. Just letting you know that in case there's a call that goes against the Texans. But the context matters here. If they have a 24-0 lead and then Kansas City scores 51 unanswered, no, the season was not a success. Yes, if the Texans are up 31-3 early in the second half and then Kansas City, led by their backup quarterback, storms back and defeats a Houston team in the playoffs, no, not considered a success. So a lot of this will be defined based on tomorrow's game. If they get their break speed off of them, I wouldn't consider this season a success. It's going to feel stagnant. It's going to feel like the gap between you and the top teams in this league is vast and wide. So I have to wait and see how tomorrow plays out.
Yeah, I think that's extremely key, and that's why I said what I said too, because of the fact that if they're able to hang with them, if it's a one-score game, if it, you know, comes down to the end, or they had a lead in the second half and they look halfway decent, I'm fine with it because it's been so up and down. Yeah, but if they get their doors blown off and we have to relive a game like Christmas, then we're going to have a different discussion.
Where are you standing on this one, Brian?
I'll concede what you guys have both said about leaving some room for how the game goes tomorrow. And, you know, if it's a shootout, they lose, you know, 30-27, they're in it till the end, then maybe that'll change my opinion. But just blanket statement without knowing what happens tomorrow, I would say no, it's a failure, because I don't believe in the idea of being able to stand still. Like, there's no, to me, any room, or you can't call standing still anything but taking a step back. Like, I'm butchering the phrase here. But if you're not moving forward, you're taking a step back. The Texans went all in on this season. They signed Danielle Hunter in free agency. They signed DeNico Autry. They traded for Joe Mixon. They got Stephon Diggs. They've put themselves in a situation because Stroud was on the rookie contract. They spent all this money to be able to go for it now, and they're eventually, you know, they're not going to have the same cap room next year. Stroud after next season is probably going to want a new deal. I'm not saying they're, you know, outside of the window or the window's closing, kind of like Joe Mixon suggested the other day, but this might be what we look back in 5 to 10 years as their best window or their best opportunity to go for it, because of what I just mentioned with the salary cap, you know, limits, and with Stroud getting paid and putting either further restrictions on them. Considering what they put into this season. If they were to just go out in the exact same round, basically have the exact same role, 10-7, division win, go out in the second round, I would consider this a failure, because not only did you not go any further, but you're viewing yourself as completely second tier to the Chiefs, the Bills, and the Ravens, and the limitations on you because of the salary cap are about to get worse.
Yeah, but I think that it's not a step back if you're adding significant players, and even some of those that got hurt, but I think that you improved the roster. The draft picks that you added are not only contributed substantially this year to make you better than I thought that they were going to be, specifically in the secondary, and that they can get better. And I think that if you get better in the offseason in the offensive line, there's every reason to believe that you can take that, you know, to use one of the phrases, but you can take one step backward and go forward next year with little tweaking and redoing of the offensive line.
Yeah, I think that's why it matters on how you lose tomorrow, because you're not going to have as much financial freedom as they did in this previous offseason. Like, you still have Stroud on his rookie deal, but you had way more financial freedom last offseason than you're going to have this offseason. And, yeah, the Texans have some players coming back, but you feel like you still need a substantial amount of help, and you're going to feel like you need a lot of help if the Chiefs beat you by 30. I think that I have this take, and people think I'm crazy, that sometimes we overrate, like, win-loss record and overrate wins. Like, who cares that they went 10-7 and won the AFC South? Like, whenever Bill O'Brien was going 9-7 and winning the AFC South, we never took the Texans as a championship contender. I think what matters the most is what you think the perception is of the gap between the top of the league and where you are. Like, you could have went 9-8 this year. C.J. Stroud could have missed the first half of the season, lost a bunch of games, and then when you got Stroud back, he was like an MVP candidate and led you on this huge surge to get you into the postseason, and you would feel really good about the future. So I think that the context matters more than the win-loss record, and for me, I like to look more at where you are relative to the top of the league than, you know, this record attached to your name and where you stacked up in, quite frankly, what was not a very good division.
Yeah, I would agree with that, just because of the fact that when you look at the way the season played out, but you look at the fact that there's every reason to believe that you're going to get better in the offseason, even if you don't have as much money to spend, and because you can, we all know you can creatively work the cap. But, you know, you still have draft picks. You still have ways that you can get better. But you're not the Bengals. Like, to your point, on the negative side, the Bengals were a favorite in the AFC. They got off to a slow start. They lost close games. Now you're looking at trying to re-sign both of your starting receivers. Your defense was awful, so much so that you fired your defensive coordinator. And now, as good as Joe Burrow played down the stretch, it's hard to feel good about where you are as a team because of the fact that you didn't get in. You have the chance of possibly losing one, if not both of your receivers, and your defense is just garbage.
Yeah, but Burrow played so well, I think it, like, gives Cincinnati hope. Like, I wonder, like, if the Texans get beat by 30 tomorrow and Stroud's very mediocre, do Bengal fans have more optimism for their next year than Texans fans do?
Probably because it's the quarterback position that they probably do. But other than that, I think that it would be fool's gold if it was something else, because of the fact that their defense was just so bad, and the Texans defense looks like it's only going to get better, and their skill position players for the most part are under contract.
713-780-ESPN, that's where my head's at. Like, I think that they would have more confidence, and I'm not sure that they would be wrong. Like, gun to your head, you had to pick either the Bengals or the Texans to win the Super Bowl next year, who are you picking?
Yeah, I mean, again, Bengals. Yeah, probably the Bengals. The personnel matters, because we don't know if those guys are going to be back next year.
Yeah, you're making a best guess right now, which is very difficult to do. You're right. But that is the challenging part of the question.
I think Chase is back. I'm not sure that Higgins will be back.
Yeah, Chase will be back. Yeah. I would guess Higgins is 75% gone. I don't think they can afford to pay Chase if they also pay Higgins. So
trying to add any pieces in free agency defensively.
I'm sure that they will, but this is why tomorrow, like, matters a lot, right?
Yeah.
Because if Kansas City hits a game winner at the buzzer in a game that you should have won, that answer flips.
Yeah,
now you have more faith in the Texans than you would the Bengals.
Yeah, because I think in that situation, like, if let's say Kansas City hits in your scenario, a walk-off field goal to win it by 3, then you're going to feel you're at least pretty close to the level of the Chiefs, which then means you're at the you could or talk yourself into the Texans being in that tier. But if they go out and lose like they lost to the Ravens on Christmas Day, the Texans would have gone out and spent all this money, limited themselves with their flexibility with the salary cap, especially going into 2 years from now where Stroud's contract goes through the roof, and you didn't get any closer. Like, if they spent all this money on Danielle Hunter, DeNico Autry, bringing in Mixon, restructuring him, bringing in Diggs, they did all that, and then you're still very clearly the fourth or fifth best team in the AFC because you're behind the Chiefs, the Bills, the Ravens, and maybe the Bengals, then how can that not be a failure?
Exactly. Yeah. 713-780-ESPN. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Philip, you're in the Hive. What's going on, Philip?
Hey guys. One thing I haven't heard mentioned yet was that at the beginning of the year, there was a lot of hand-wringing over, oh, gee, huh, I don't know. We might only win 9 games, but we might be better than last year because the strength of the schedule is so much more difficult this year. And so even being equal, you have to look at it and go, well, they played a much tougher schedule and still got the same results. So at least you can make a small argument that is some progress. They took on a tougher schedule and did the same or better. The other thing, too, with the cap space, I'm not as concerned about because, quite frankly, I don't think Laramie is worth what he's getting paid. And I think a year or two from now, his contract will be gone. And, you know, Diggs, you know, played half a year and he's making a lot of money. And between the two of them and a cap increase, you got Stroud paid for. And those guys, you know, you draft a left tackle with your first round pick, like Dwayne Brown, and you go out, assuming you hit it right. Obviously, that's an assumption.
Big assumption.
And then you replace Diggs with a second round receiver, and you got your cap space for Stroud, and you're set to go. So I'm not too concerned. They have some flexibility there still, I think, long term. But yeah, obviously, some changes would have to be made.
Yeah,
Phil, and I'll just hang up and listen. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for the call, Philip. I appreciate it. I wish it was that easy. I don't think they're looking at getting out from under Laramie Tunsil. I think they're going to look long and hard at looking at making a move with Howard. And I think that, you know, that just starts the process. I think that, you know, if it was that simple, then I think that they, you know, a lot of teams would do it on a year-by-year basis.
Yeah, just draft a left tackle and a wide receiver.
Yeah.
Everything's great.
And you know their propensity to draft offensive linemen that have been less than in the last couple of years.
Yeah, you just draft a Pro Bowl generational left tackle, and you get a great wide receiver in the second round. It's just that easy.
He didn't say that. He said draft
Dwayne
a left
Brown.
Tackle receiver. Well, that's true. I guess he did say that. I do like hand-wringing, though. It's a good phrase. I mean, he's probably onto something. Like, you're not going to... Next year might be different because Stroud's still going to be on his rookie deal. But whenever Stroud does eventually get paid, you're going to have to get rid of some of the other, you know, Olabatros contracts that you have. Laramie Tunsil isn't going to be, you know, he's going to be a Texan next year. You're probably looking at bringing in a receiver. The Titus Howard thing I'm kind of wavering on for a variety of reasons, probably more of an offseason conversation. But, yeah, now the record aspect of it, he's right about, you know, the hand-wringing to the schedule and, you know, winning less games because the schedule is more difficult, yet with the more difficult schedule, here they are with the same win-loss record. But what if the delta between the top team and you is larger, though? Like, that's why I don't put a whole lot of inventory on the win-loss record whenever I'm thinking about their chances of being amongst the elite.
Well, that's the other thing. I mean, when you look at it, the team that knocked you out last year got better too, and they got significantly better because they added Derrick Henry, and he went off. So it's also about, like, from year to year, where does the rest of the – to your point about, you know, the record, the win-loss differential, however you measure it, if Kansas City goes out and suddenly adds, you know, a receiver and or some offensive line help, then no matter what they were at the end of this season and how this season ends – if they got significantly better, you know, and they're doing the same things you're trying to do, then it's an even bigger uphill battle because you know Cincinnati's going to try and get better, and they had an off year. But you know from the standpoint of Kansas City and Baltimore and probably Buffalo too, they're not going anywhere.
Right. I mean, every team tries to get better though, right?
But like, yeah, but I'm just saying Kansas City has found a way, and with the guy that they have at quarterback, they know they don't have to get like the top of the top free agent receivers or they could draft another receiver. But that the fact that everybody's going to want to play for them too. It's easier for them to, especially on the offensive side of the ball, to say, hey, come block for Patrick Mahomes or come be a wide receiver in an Andy Reid offense, as opposed to some of the other teams that are trying to get better.
See, I think you overrate the desire of a player playing for a specific team, though.
I know money's like, the first priority, but yeah. I'm just saying that winning and playing in a system like that, when you're an off, especially a skill position player, you're going to probably, even if things are close to all things being the same, you're going to probably look at Kansas City because of the fact that there's the playoff money aspect, there's you know, and the fact that you could have bigger numbers because of the people that are doing what they're doing. That's just my way of looking at it.
713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Terry, gets you on the other side. Texters will get to you on the other side as well. It is the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. First, I got to tell you about the greatness that is Pro Dunk Hoops. They have the highest quality basketball goals you'll ever find. They are the best. You don't want to waste your time in the big box stores. If you're in the market, get a goal from Pro Dunk. You'll be doing yourself a favor. You'll be doing your kids a favor. You'll be doing the wife a favor. Even if she doesn't like basketball, just because it's not an eyesore, it's not going to bring your property value down. It's going to make it soar. It's going to go up. The goals from Pro Dunk have a tempered glass backboard. Gives you that true, authentic feel. Breakaway rim. More on that in a moment. Stainless steel hardware. And it's rust proof, which is must have in Houston. You can lower your goal down to 5 feet. You can raise it all the way up to 10 feet. Anywhere in between as well. That's why that breakaway rim comes into handy. If you want to throw down some jams, lower that bad boy down and throw down some slams. Their new goal, Thor, you can raise and lower the goals with a drill. It's their lightning adjust feature, 5 to 10 feet in a matter of seconds. Easy to do, fun to do, and it's foolproof for people like me. Their accessories are next level too. LED light kits for night play, backstop nets, pole pad lettering, and lots more. Head over to ProDunk.com to find all of those accessories. And another feature from ProDunk, you can also order professional installation as well. You don't want that big box delivered to your driveway with a million pieces to assemble. It's daunting. It's overwhelming. You're not going to be very good at it. Let the pros at ProDunk professionally install that goal at the perfect height, perfectly straight. You don't do a thing. Let the pros at ProDunk do that work for you. Give them a call at 281-351-9822 and visit ProDunk.com. That's ProDunk.com.
The best in Houston sports talk is ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, the Texans lose tomorrow. Should this season still be considered a success? 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line. Let's head out to the HRMP listener line. Terry, you're in the Hive. What's going on, Terry?
Man, as always, thanks for taking my call. So want to preface this by saying we all know how hard it is to win a Super Bowl and a World Series and NBA championships and Stanley Cup and stuff. But if they lose a close one tomorrow, I think it's going to be the second best season we've ever had. And I'm not talking wins and losses, but I tell this to my friends all the time. Let's go back. 2019 season, we were 2 quarters and 10 minutes away, up 24-0. From hosting the AFC Championship game against Tennessee, because Tennessee had beaten Baltimore, who was number one. That, to this up to date, that is the best season we've ever had.
Is it the best or is it the closest they got? Like, I think it's two different things. Like, I think it's the closest they got. I don't know if it's the best season though.
What is 14-2 season the best?
I mean,
yeah, but
14-2.
Throw out the amount of wins. I mean, guys, we would have beat Tennessee in NRG, and we'd have gone to Super Bowl.
Yeah, I agree with that. Like, I agree with that. But was that the best year, or was it the closest they got to going to the Super Bowl?
Well, to me, I think it was the best year because Look at what happened. I mean, look at what happened after that, man. 3 years of purgatory.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if the 3 years after the season that is the best year is significant to the argument of what's the best year. Like, to me, it's the year that you were 12-4. Didn't they? That's the year that they lost Schaub. I get these years.
No, the year they lost Schaub, they were 10-6.
So 2012 is the year they went to New England and lost.
Yes.
In the
mm-hmm.
AFC. That's probably their best year. I think that's their best
year. Yeah. I'm just saying, man, we were 24-0 in the driver's seat, and then all hell broke loose.
No, you're right. You're right about that, Terry. And we're appreciate the call. Thank you for listening. And look, we're arguing semantics. Mm-hmm. It's all opinion, and this is all relative. Like, I mean, everybody's entitled to their opinion. This is not a fact at all. But if for my money, I would have to go to the 2012 Texans as the best year they've ever had. That was their best win-loss record they ever had. It was tied for the furthest they've ever went in the playoffs. And, yeah, you didn't have a chance against New England, but you really didn't have a chance in any of these divisional games.
Yeah, I was going to say, and you know, you're looking at scenarios, too, where even in the first half of the divisional game, you were in it. Even last year, you were in it. And then the second half is how you remember the season because – as it goes, is it a bitter taste in your mouth when you walk away from the end of the season? Maybe you were outmatched. Like in that year, it's easy to say New England was a far better team than you were, and so you can understand it. You can tip the cap to it, and you can you know that hey, we still had a hell of a year. But if you go out similar to the way the Ravens manhandled you on Christmas, then it's worse than the way the Ravens came back in the second half and beat you last year. Now your entire offseason, you're going to be stewing, going that really sucked. And they didn't really battle and perform the way I expected them to, so I'm going to feel a lot more negative about that.
Yeah, I don't really think it's debatable. I think that's the best year the Texans ever had.
Yeah, I meant instead of 14-2, 12-4, and that's exactly the season I was thinking of. Yeah,
and, I mean, they started that year 11-1. They were 12-2.
That was the letter jacket.
That was the letter jacket year. Yeah, they were 11-1, and then yeah, we know what happened.
I think it's easily their best year.
See, I would. I mean, again, there's no actual wrong answer here, and I'm not saying 2012 is far off, but I would go 11 because, again, you're tied with the furthest you've ever gotten into the playoffs. And the Texans, even with their third-string quarterback in T.J. Yates, if Jacoby Jones doesn't fumble a ball away, they were right there with Baltimore the entire way. Yates throws three picks. Jacoby Jones has the fumble on the punt returns that sets the Ravens up for like a three-yard touchdown. And despite all that, they were still in the game in the second half. So I thought that was the best team they've ever had. And certainly with Schaub, I think they win that Ravens game. How far they go beyond that, I'm not sure. But had they obviously got to the AFC title game, that would be the best season in team history.
I mean, they were down 17-3 after the end of the first quarter, and they had T.J. Yates as their quarterback. Like, it's kind of how you finish, right? Like, it's kind of the product that you have at the end of the year. Like, if you're calling it the best season of all time, you have to kind of go with what you had at the end.
But if we're going to talk about how they finished, the Texans were in 2012 were 11-1, stumbled down the stretch going 1-3, lost their chance to get a bye, and then got smashed by the Patriots in round two. I mean, they finished horribly.
The 11 team, like. I don't know. It's subjective. I would go 12. Brian's goes 11, and the Terry would go this year. If they get by the Chiefs, it's their best year ever.
Yeah, without a doubt.
I don't care about the record at that point. Yeah, if you go as far as you've ever gone as a franchise, that is now your best year. 713-780 ESPN HRMP listener line. A few texts on this. The Texans can win if Chris Jones doesn't play. Well, he's going to play, so there is that. Y'all talk about money and salary cap like any of the other AFC teams don't have quarterbacks on huge deals. Well, there's a few conversations to have here. The first one would be Pat Mahomes is on a super team-friendly deal, so that helps Kansas City build a roster around him. And then secondly, if you're paying C.J. Stroud the same percentage of the cap that you're paying Josh, that the Bills are paying Josh Allen and the Ravens are playing Lamar Jackson, is he giving you similar return on investment? Like, I would argue he's not.
Right.
And that's kind
of
part.
At some point.
And that's kind of part of the problem why it doesn't, like, to the texter's point, we're like, well, they have the same problems. Yeah, but they're already at that top level. They're already at that top tier. If we're talking about the Texans losing badly to the Chiefs tomorrow, sure, they would have the same complications once they pay Stroud, but they'd be in a position where they have to catch up, where they have to improve to catch up to the Chiefs, Ravens, and the Bills, while the Bills, Chiefs, and Ravens are already there. So that would be the difference.
Yeah, and the scary part is that when you're facing, if you're looking at what you're going to do with CJ, if CJ underperforms or isn't performing like those guys, you almost get into a Green Bay situation where you can't let him go because the alternative is really nothing that's going to help
you. Oh, there's no chance they would.
Right?
Yeah,
so
of course.
So now you're going to have to pay him and hope that he continues to get to the level to develop the way that Burrow, the way that Lamar, the way that Mahomes, and the way that Allen have.
Yeah, you can't. It's not as simple as saying, well, this guy's making, you know, 30% of the cap. This guy's making 30% of the cap. It's all equal. No, it's the return. Like, if you have a salary cap league, you need a return on the dollar. So if you're paying a guy, I know they don't have max contracts in the NFL, but all these top quarterbacks are similar. Well, you better be getting a really good return and an excellent return.
The other thing, Jeremy, is when you think about it, because you mentioned the Mahomes deal, Brady did the same thing. If you get a quarterback that is so hell-bent focused on wanting to win that he's willing to work with you, and the way the Chiefs did it, Mahomes didn't lose any money. It was just structured in a way that would be more beneficial to adding players to the roster and making them a better team. Brady did it, as people will tell you, year after year after year, trying to better the team. Some guys are just going to say, that's all fine and dandy. I want mine. I need every dollar I'm supposed to get, and then, you know, I still want to win, but that's secondary.
713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line. If the Texans lose tomorrow, is the season considered a success? A few more texts on this. Nico was just extended. Who's the number two in Kansas City, Baltimore, or Buffalo? Does it matter, though? Like, if you have Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson playing at an MVP level, does it matter who their number two is? Like, if you have Pat Mahomes, does it matter who your number two is? But, like, the Texans' number two right now is...
What? Mechie?
Dalton Schultz?
Yeah.
John Mechie? Xavier Hutchinson? Like, Tank Dell, if he's healthy.
It's not Woods, right?
No, it's not Woods.
Like, maybe he's in the conversation. Tank Dell, if he's healthy, would be.
Yeah.
Like, but Tank Dell's not healthy, and he's not going to be healthy next year. Kansas City has a plethora of receivers, quite frankly. They're just all hurt. Rashi Rice hurt. He's really good. Hollywood Brown has been hurt all year. He's a solid receiver. DeAndre Hopkins is a good veteran. I'm probably missing a guy. Baltimore,
and they're
going to
get Rashi Rice back next year.
Well, he said Rashi Rice, but here's the thing. To Jeremy's point, more so than that, and to debunk what the caller's saying, or the listener saying, is the fact that they went from Tyreek Hill, they went from all these different receivers. He won with Marquez Valdez-Scantling and Tony and other guys last year because he's that good.
Yeah. Yeah, he's Lamar is really good, or Mahomes rather. But they both are, but I meant Mahomes. They also have to pay Anderson and Stingley. Yeah, there's going to be some tough decisions. Good problem to have, because if you have good players, you're making tough decisions. I'm a diehard Texans fan, want them to kick some Chiefs booty. However, let's remember Andy Reid is 21-4 off a bye week. Hard to ignore that. That is hard to ignore. He's one of the best coaches ever. Is the Astros' best year 17 or 19? That's easy for me. It's 17. They won a World Series.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah, you can't say, well, it's like, again, I always go back to the whole, the Warriors set the regular season record for wins, but they didn't win the title that year. So to me, that season doesn't mean anything. It's how you finish, and if you finish by winning the title, then it's more important.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And then final one, he's Stroud, second-year quarterback. What was Lamar's second-year outlook? Y'all acting like CJ isn't going to grow as a quarterback. He's younger than Caleb Williams. I don't know what we did to
Lamar
suggest
won
that.
An MVP in his second year.
Also, yeah, and I mean, I also don't know
what's bad.
Yeah, what did we do to provoke that response?
Maybe we said that his return on investment's not going to be as good as those other guys whenever he gets that massive contract.
Well, that's why the time matters, because you don't want to be forced backed into a corner unless he's playing his ass off to say that, you know, David Mulgeta or someone's going to say, we want the extension for CJ early, because from year one to year two, there's enough to have you even more so concerned. And from a cap perspective, you don't want to spend it till it's time. So you have every chance to you know, benefit for the rest of your roster that, yeah, you just, that's why it's such a fine line in how you handle all of it.
Yeah, it is. All right, let's get to BZ Money. Let's make everybody some money this week. What are we going to bet on these games? Divisional round, four games to bet. We're going to bet them all. It is the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
Do these guys have any idea what they're doing? Probably not. But that won't stop them from making picks. This is BZ Money.
Well, it's simply not true. We've been fantastic this year at BZ Money. We've been really, really good. We're up over $300 year to date. We were winners again last week. All three of us have winning records. In fact, Joe did it one week, and even he won. It's a good thing he won, because he doesn't pay his bets. All right, let's take a look at these games around the divisional round. We're gonna do this a little differently today, because there's only four games. So we're just going to talk about each game and which side we like and how much we eventually want to bet on it. Should we want to bet? I say we should bet all four. Let's start with the first game tomorrow. Texans-Chiefs. Chiefs right now are 8-point favorites at home against the Texans. What kind of way are you feeling on it, Blankers?
If my money's in the process, involved in the process, I'm going to lean Kansas City. I think eight is a number that I feel pretty confident the Chiefs can get to, even if it is a closer game in the second half. I think that, you know, with the Texans, probably if they get behind and they're trying to get, they get desperate or a turnover happens, I think the Chiefs can easily win this game by 9 or 10. I would lean the Chiefs way.
I'm going to go Texas because I'm a homer and I'm feeling very positive today because I had that skirt steak and I'm in a good mood. So those are the reasons.
That's the entirety of the reason, skirt steak.
Yeah.
I mean, look, it's a good reason. I'm not going to knock you for it. I'm just making sure we have that up front, the reason it's skirt steak. I'm going to go Texans plus the points just because, I mean, we talked about it and I know the whole flip the one score thing doesn't really matter because the Chiefs, you know, they know how to win one score games. But the fact is, they play one-score games. They've done it all season. I think there's only like three games this entire season that haven't been one-score games. So I'm going to make it a one-score game and say Texans plus the points.
Well, then I'm out. Weather, Mahomes, never been there. Okay, go ahead.
I hear you. Joel's pro-Kansas City. That's what I'm hearing.
No one's saying they're going to win.
Mr. Kansas City, Joel Blank.
We're just saying that they're going
to
cover.
Is just like if you get to the double-digit range of some of the – at least one of the other games is – I'm
going
to have
Lions
a different conversation,
game is
but yeah, I'm not. Eight is scary to me with Mahomes and the Chiefs.
I'm being optimistic. So we're going to bet the Texans here because you're outvoted.
Yep.
I think we should go small, though, because I'm not even that confident.
100%
about it. Mine just totally.
I thought you were going to say $100. I'm like, slow down.
No. I'm for a small bet here. I believe what I'm saying, but I'm not willing to put, you know, a large amount on that.
You want to go two dimes or a quarter?
Quarter.
Okay. Quarter it is. Swarm Texans. The other big spread is tomorrow as well. You get the two big spreads tomorrow, the two tighter spreads on Sunday. Detroit at home for the Commanders. The Lions are a 9.5-point favorite over the Commies. How are we feeling about this one?
Yeah, that's the game that I've seen go to 10. And I'm like, I just feel like 10 is too much. I feel like Detroit's going to win the game. I feel like it could be 7-9. I just think over 9, I got question marks. I would take Washington in the points.
See, I like the Lions side of this one. Like this feels like this has to be the season for the Lions, right? Like you might lose both coordinators.
Yeah.
You're healthy. Well, you're not.
They're
healthy.
Not. They're so dinged up.
That's kind of the whole point.
You've had more guys on the IR than anybody else in the league, but I still think that they're far better than the Commanders. I think that they roll tomorrow. Double-digit win. I'm on the Lions.
I'm on Joel's side on this one. Like I understand what you're saying, and would I be shocked if the Lions, you know, came out and completely obliterated the Commanders? I would not, but the Lions, at some point, the injuries in the Lions' defense has to catch up to them, and I believe in the Commanders' offense. And we saw last year, I mean, different teams a little bit, but the Buccaneers in the division round went to Detroit and kept that game close and lost in a shootout. So I think Detroit wins. I think they win it by, like, right at a touchdown, but at 9.5 points, I'm going to take the Commanders plus the points.
All right. I'll be on the wrong side of history. It's fine by me.
25 again?
Yeah, I'm good with that.
Yeah.
All right, moving on to the Sunday games, which Vegas is telling us will be more competitive. In Philly, the Eagles, 6.5-point favorites over the Rams, the worst team in the playoffs. Philly or L.A., Blinkers?
Man, I really think the Rams are going to be in this ballgame. I like the Rams a lot. I hate that number, and if this was a little – if the Eagles at home were favored by a touchdown or more, I'd really lean Rams. But I still like the Rams. I think the Rams are going to be in this game. I think that Jalen Hurts looked really rusty last week. Not good. Yes, Saquon looked good. Brown didn't even get the ball. The passing game was less than. The Rams are hot right now. I like the Rams and the points.
Yeah, I don't really have a good feel on this one. You just talked me into it, though, Blankers. You're very impressionable. Well, I'm impressionable, and you sold me into it. Plus, I hate Nick Sirianni. Like,
yes, you do.
I'll take every opportunity to try to go against Nick Sirianni. So I was on the fence. You sold a nice sales pitch on to me. Give me the Rams. And I like the Rams. The Rams are easy to root for. I like McVay. I like Stafford. I like Puka. I like Cooper. I like Kyron Williams. I don't like the Eagles. I don't like Philly. I don't like Nick Sirianni.
Well, for the record, I disagree. I mean, these two teams played about, a month and a half ago, and the Eagles smashed them 1-17, rushed for 200 yards. That was on the road in L.A. Now they're at home where it looks like there's a chance for snow. I would take the Eagles to cover this and kill them with the running game and Saquon, but I'm outvoted.
You're outvoted, but you did influence probably the bet here.
Yeah, you did. 25 again?
25 again. We've been split.
We've been very conservative here.
But that's good because then we have more that we can blow later if we feel more confident as we get deeper in the playoffs, and we can bet on games deeper in the playoffs instead of blowing it all.
You're not going to let us blow it, though, Blankers.
What are you talking about?
You don't like us to bet big.
Well, but we've still done it. I mean, when I'm outvoted, a lot of times that doesn't allow me to get into it, and we still had big bets this year.
The game of the weekend, the Buffalo Bills. They're home dogs. The Ravens are a point and a half favorite. It's going to be cold, maybe snowy. There's snow on the ground there already in Orchard Park, New York. Ravens minus 1.5 on the road in Buffalo.
I like the Ravens. I think that both are capable and really good running quarterbacks. They can run in snow. They've played in cold weather. Derrick Henry is better than Cook. I just feel like the Ravens right now, and maybe the weather helps because then it's more difficult for Josh Allen to throw the ball as opposed to against the pass defense that I'd be a little bit leery of with Baltimore's pass defense this year. But I just think the Ravens, again, kind of like the Rams, but even on a different level. The Ravens are playing their best football. They are inspired, and they have talent, and I like them to win the game.
Which quarterback do you think is better?
I think Lamar deserves the MVP this year.
So which quarterback do you think is better?
He wants us to say Lamar for his Josh Allen bias.
I'll say Lamar.
Yeah!
But you got a skirt steak and Joel to bash Josh Allen today.
They have the better quarterback. They have the better running back. They have the better defense. Give me the Ravens, even though they're a road favorite tomorrow, or Sunday rather, in Buffalo.
Our first unanimous decision, for all the reasons you guys gave, they got the better quarterback, the better defense, the better running back. I think the weather favors their style of play more. Give me Ravens, and I'll take the points. Or 100? I'll give the points.
And here we go. Finish with the big one.
How much
75.
Are we going? You say 75?
I didn't want to go 100. I'm trying to get it down lower, and I know how stubborn he can be.
75, where you let's do go? It.
All right, let's go.
Yeah, let's go. Josh Allen's going to make me feel real bad if he wins. He's going to make me feel bad
on
two fronts.
Then you'll come back next week and you still won't bet on him.
Well, I'll still say he hadn't won a Super Bowl yet. Take lock, or whatever that means. All right, DJ Bienemy covers the Texans for ESPN, ESPN.com. He joins us next. Break down tomorrow's matchup. It is the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Houston's independent voice for sports, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.